that does it for today's show. If you'd like more information, visit us at radioproject.org or find us on Twitter or Instagram. If you have thoughts about today's episode, leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Lucy Kang. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. KBOO.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Jean, and I also use she and her pronouns.
Sheila, and I do she and her also.
Today is our transgender self-care show. We're going to be talking today about how we can take care of ourselves in the face of the overwhelming transphobia that we're witnessing in this historic moment in our country. In order to do that, first we're going to be kind of giving a historical review of like the last 5 minutes of anti-transgender legislation that's been happening around the country. And then we're going to be talking about what we're doing to take care of ourselves. And then we're going to be talking about what we can do to begin to kind of react to what's going on in a positive and constructive way. So why don't we first just all check in. Let's all check in with each other and see how we're all doing. So I'll start. Again, my name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns. And I'm doing really great. I'm serving right now as the president of KBOO. And KBOO, we've been so busy right now. We are in the middle of 5 hires right now. We're in the middle of a station manager hire, development director hire, web coordinator hire, membership coordinator, and engagement coordinator, which is social media and fundraising. So there's a lot of growth in our staff right now at KBOO, and I'm really excited. It's been really positive, and KBOO is slowly reopening. So, you know, if you're a programmer, you can come back to KBOO and start using the studios again. And but we are still doing COVID protocols. So I'm pretty excited about all that. But what I'm so excited about the most is that spring is here and it's finally getting warm and it's sunny. And, you know, even with all the horrible news that's going on, who can be sad when it's when there's sunshine? So how about you, Jean? How are you doing?
Well, I'll certainly echo that last point of yours. It's probably my primary at this point. You know, yay, springtime. Oh, I was so ready. I was so ready. And I'm just so anxious. But, you know, getting back out doing more outdoors work in my yard and garden, and that's always that connection to earth and everything from instead of being kind of, you know, stuck inside the house and maybe way too focused on, you know, media and things like that. It's so healing to get reconnected with Mother Earth.
Yeah. And how about you? How about you, Sheila? How are you doing?
Well, it's gorgeous on the coast, and the sun was out today, and I enjoyed sitting in the sand with all of my books around me, and I'm well fed. And I told a friend today that the key thing is that this is kind of what I wanted, a life without distractions, where I just had open-ended days and can do what I please. So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, there's a lot going on right now, and so we're gonna start the show by kind of just hitting some of the high points or low points, depending on your perspective, of what's been going on in the country. We're gonna start down in Florida and make our way up to Montana. And this is going to be pretty short. So we're not going to spend a lot of time going into all the negativity, because this show is mostly about taking care of ourselves and reacting positively. But for those who don't know, we want to make sure that we let you know what's going on right now around the country, because there's been this, it seems like all of a sudden transgender people, especially transgender kids, are public enemy number one. For the Republican right-wing faction of this country. And in Florida, trans kids had almost all of their rights taken away. Like, trans kids can't get medically appropriate care while they're in school. They also passed a law saying that you can't teach about LGBTQ history or LGBTQ issues in Florida. If we keep on going across the country, in Tennessee, which is not that far away from Florida, they passed a law banning drag performances in most public venues, because any place where a child might see it, because they said that they're erotic performances, they're not appropriate for children. They also, in one county, completely banned all drag performances. If we keep on going across the country, it seems like there's sort of like this wave of transphobia running across the Middle South in kind of a straight line. If we go to Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, all three of those states have passed laws that are basically banning trans kids from performing in sports, banning trans kids from getting any kind of medically appropriate health care, threatening doctors with prison sentences of up to 10 years. If they try to offer services to trans kids. And then in Missouri and I think it's in Kansas, they passed a bill now not allowing transgender people to use the bathroom, which is one of the first in the country. And in Missouri, which is, of course, neighbors to Kansas, they passed a bill that transgender adults can't get medically appropriate care. So if you're a transgender adult now in the state of Missouri, you have to jump through this labyrinth, which has been basically written by Republican legislators. And it's ableist, and it's trans misogynistic, and it's also just really, really awful. I mean, it completely denies medically appropriate care for adults, which is kind of a first. If we keep on going across the country, we get to the great state of Montana, which just recently passed a bill banning trans kids from having any kind of medically appropriate care in school, not participating in athletics. And then they also kind of up the ante too, because in Montana they have a transgender state legislator that they barred from the floor of the state legislature. And the reason that they barred her was because when they passed this bill, she got up in the state assembly and said that you have blood on your hands and that transgender kids are basically going to kill themselves because of what's happening. That was the implication of what she said. And for saying that, she was banned from the state assembly for that. Then, of course, in our next door neighbor of Idaho, they have also banned trans kids from participating in athletics. So that's just a snapshot. There's actually over 500 anti-LGBTQ bills that have been passed or are under consideration in state houses across the country. Does anybody want to add to the pile of bad news before we get on to talking about how we're taking care of ourselves?
I have a comment on just the framing of it. It's important to realize that there's very little precedent for having a targeted group of people to be addressed by legislation. And it's important to realize that by the mere fact that it is experimental, that there's going to be a lot of problems emerging out of this. One of the most obvious is that the bathroom bills will mandate that everybody must, no matter what their gender position, and many of these people are going to be post-operative, people that have been on hormone therapy for years, are going to suddenly have to reverse course and go back to bathrooms that they haven't visited for years under pain of being charged with varying degrees of criminal conduct for not doing so. And that is going to be a mess. And I don't think they've thought this through. And I think that the confusion, the social turmoil that will emerge from this is going to be really problematic. And so, plus, I think that by the mere overkill and biting off as much as they could possibly chew on this thing without thinking it through and based upon very faulty presumptions, I think that they have inadvertently caused a big slide of sane opinion in favor of transgender people, not only on privacy issues, but on therapeutic issues and on basically medical standards that are set by professional organizations. In other words, a lot of the abuse is not landing only on trans people's heads, but upon the doctors that treat us as being portrayed as butchers and people that are just basically slicing and dicing human beings. And I'm sure that most doctors, especially those that are actively involved in our care, are not going to take that sitting down.
I completely agree with with what you have to say there, Sheila. I think the operative question in my mind is less so exactly what is happening or what is likely to happen as a result, but the question is why? Why are these, Republican dominated state legislatures, and it's not limited to the state. U.S. House of Representatives has had some similar stuff introduced by the Republicans as well at the federal level. But the question really, in my mind, is why? What exactly really is the motivation? And there are lots of superficial, what I consider to be superficial, apparent reasons. The classic one-liners, preserving, family values, and they're just these one-liners that are really just kind of media stuff, is that when we look back to the show that Nicolette sponsored on the Stages of Genocide, is a great show. If folks listening to this one haven't heard that one, it's available on the archives at KBOO. But there is a broader motivation than the superficial rationales that are given. And it's a dehumanizing approach, and it's truly being utilized as the point of the spear for a fascist, the fascist movement, the far right wing in this country. Yes, I don't think they really see us. Or trans care, as a threat to civilization, or that the country is going to completely fall apart because of us. It's simply we're being used, and we have been being used as one of the tools for building a fascist state. That's my assessment.
Well, I think the reason that, in answer to your question, the reason that is being utilized, one is that it works. It definitely creates a sense of hysteria amongst people, and it fits in with their overall wider narrative that we're caught in a period of cultural decline and decadence, and that somehow their thought is if they just put their foot down and really go to the barricades on this issue, that it will go along with all the other things that they're afraid of, which is that we're moving into a one world state. The working class in America, especially industrial America, is being eroded by a fictitious elite which has taken over the schools, is indoctrinating the kids, and is basically destroying the America that they imagine still exists at some level, and that this is all tied up with the whole undermining of the way of life that is based upon a very essentialist conception of what human beings are and ignores variation. Whether it's racial variation, or whether it's gender variation, or whether it's a variation on who you choose for your life partners. So these are the types of things that they feel that if they could somehow find something that's such a tiny minority that it can't fight back, and particularly it's interesting that they use these linguistic battles, which started with Jordan Peterson, the idea that somehow we're seeing a breakdown of fundamental categories. So they take it on a real philosophic edge that we are smudging and blurring distinctions, and therefore that we can't engage in civil discourse because we can't even pin the terms down. So this is why so much of it seems to center around pronoun usage, whether or not people are universally adopting them or not.
Jean was asking earlier, I'm sorry, I'm going off script a little bit, but Jean was asking earlier, like, why are people doing this? And I think that part of what we have to do is we really have to look at why are people doing this? I mean, and you just brought up a reason. So this whole, like, pronoun thing, it's, I mean, mm-hmm. I love it when people use the appropriate pronouns for me. I really appreciate it. But what they're, I mean, I listen to them a lot because I want to hear what they're saying. I want to hear the language that they are using about us. And I want to try to understand their perspective, even though it's difficult to listen to them. So that's one of their big complaints. Mm-hmm. One of their big complaints is about pronouns. They feel like suddenly they've been imposed upon by, I mean, and I know it doesn't happen everywhere because I don't, there's not that many places I go where people go around and they say, oh, hi, my name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns. But it's like just the fact that there's some people doing it in some places seems to be a real trigger for them. And they say ridiculous things like they say, oh, everybody's getting fired if they don't use the right pronouns. And we know that that's not true. I mean, people aren't getting fired for not using the right pronouns. The whole pronoun thing was just an attempt to add a little bit of respect. It's like acknowledging there's trans people in the room. And don't just go calling somebody what you think you're going to call them just because you've assumed what their gender is. It's not a big ask. But that seems to be one of their really big ones. But I mean, there are other big ones too. I mean, the bathroom one, we've done so many shows about the bathroom. And a lot of these issues, they're just going to keep on coming up. Anyways, I interrupted you. I'm sorry, Sheila. Why don't you go on?
Well, so how we react to targeted legislation like this, particularly if we're coming at this onslaught from a memory of the way things used to be. So the particular generation that I came up in, what we were struggling for was visibility. We were an invisible group of people. We were invisible to the majority of the medical profession. We were invisible to the general public. We had to live very sheltered lives, sometimes having, kind of sandwiched in with the rest of the LGBT community and going to a clearly designated bar. And one of the decisions that I made early on is I said, I don't want to suddenly live in a ghetto existence. If I can't be who I am everywhere that I would normally go, then I haven't really arrived. I have to believe in myself enough to take the flack it takes. And there was flack. And those that remember those days know exactly what it was like. But it was because there was somehow shock value. People's only exposure to even our terminology was mediated through the medical community and primarily through the vehicle of talk shows. And that's the only disability we
Jerry
had.
Well,
now we have just the opposite. Yeah, Jerry Springer, Sally Jesse Raphael, Phil Donahue. And usually it was done in a somewhat, it was almost like the host was trying to get a response, like Donahue appearing in a skirt.
I know, I was totally thinking of that.
And then just kind of trying to get the audience riled up. Well, now he wouldn't have a problem because the audience is not only riled, they're seething and rabidly and foaming at the mouth over these things. So it's very weird for the older trans people who basically took a very, really kind of a moderate view. There were only a handful of doctors there to help us. And so we had to, you know, jump through a lot of hoops just to get to where we wanted to go. Well, at least the image that they are portraying now is this sort of transgender on demand. And so they're also assuming that the actual trans community of people suffering gender dysphoria.
Let's stop there for just a minute.
Right.
So another one that they keep on using against us that you're kind of like getting at is this word that they use called social contagion. And they use this word a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's really the word that it's the word that like they've all adopted. And it's really, to me, it's the real problem. Like if I think of anything mm-hmm. that's a problem, that's really a threat to us as a community, it's the fact that they're using this word. And basically what they're saying is they're saying that being transgender isn't a real thing. It's something that you do because the other teenagers are doing it. And that's what they call social contagion. They talk about it like it's a disease. So they talk about transgender people as if we are a disease and we're mentally ill and we're perverted. And somehow we're passing on our mental illness and our perversion to other people through this mechanism called social contagion, because we're trying to use, according to them, we're trying to use social media and we're trying to use the schools to try to influence kids to become transgender. And I don't know why they think we're trying to do this or what the rationale. Well, I mean, I know what they're doing. They're setting up a trope. They're setting up the ultimate trope. And it's the kind of trope that people, like you said, they become rabid and violent because they're basically setting us up to become victims because they want to make us into something that they're saying is evil. And so they've completely disconnected us from the community of human beings, and they've turned us into mm-hmm. these sinister things that are trying to spread perversion and wickedness and immorality. I mean, this goes all the way back to, like, you know, the Middle Ages. I mean, this kind of language that they're using, and they're whipping the crowds up right now by using really ancient ways of talking about people that you want to exterminate and that you want to get rid of by talking about, and you're just, what they're really doing is they're justifying to themselves the rationale for why they're taking these actions. And they're calling it social mm-hmm. contagion. So sorry I interrupted you, Sheila. Why don't you go on?
Well, so I'm glad you brought that out, because one of the things that I've always been convinced of is that gender differences run a gamut. I've always still used the word transsexual for people that actually seek some physical modification of our bodies to relieve our gender dysphoria. But there are people with gender dysphoria that do not make that decision, because that's a therapeutic choice. And so the thing that really matters to me is to realize that even if there was a temporary fad in that people that had been on the balance line, it took a lot of gusto to declare yourself trans when I was doing it. It's a lot easier to come out now because, for one thing, people at least know the terminologies. There's at least some basic, even if malformed, familiarity with the issue. In our day, it was still being debated if it was a branch of for instance, of schizophrenia. I mean, it was like they did not know where to put us. And so what I'm interested in now is to say, if that's the world that we once inhabited, and now we're totally visible, yet we're visible in so many different narratives being thrown at us every day that we simply can't, it's like having massive incoming, and we don't have enough missiles to shoot down the incoming missiles that are landing in our backyard. But we can put it in a historical context and say, that's the way they used to be about communism in the early 1950s. And in 1919, there was a thing called the Red Scare, and there were things called Palmerston raids to try to find, my gosh, where are the, in fact, there's a whole saying that the famous movie The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which came out in the 1950s, was sort of it was almost like a parable of the fear of either rabid homosexuals that were communists somehow invading America. These periods of national hysteria have happened before, and that should give us a little bit of hope that they're usually violent but fairly short-lived, because their very absurdity finally comes to play. And to this day, they have things on the McCarthy hearings that they were trying to extend it even into the army. And a reporter basically called them on it and said, when will you have some shame over this ruining people's lives based upon these mythological attacks that you're doing? So part of my way of dealing with this therapeutically is to see it exactly that way, to see it as a symptom of something that happens in times of national political stress. And the fact that it happens to be going our direction, there are other groups they could have gone after. There are other minority groups. It's intriguing to me that oftentimes it's also lumped in with critical race theory, because it's all seen as an overarching desire to destroy some fundamental American core of beliefs. And there's no doubt that Trump actually helped that happen by his becoming almost obsessive with the American flag as being the ultimate symbol of patriotism, and saying that actually calling people that knelt down at football games as deserving of being fired.
So one of the things that you said was, which was really interesting, is that you were basically bringing up these examples of how during the Trump administration, they kind of escalated the number of symbols and icons that they would sort of pick out for public ridicule and labeling as anti-American, and how this, I mean, this 4 years of this has led to this point where we are now in the national dialogue. It's really kind of an analog of what's happening with the national dialogue around the executive branch. And what's happening is that they've created so many, what's the word for it? It's not paper tigers, but they've created so many
Straw men.
Straw men, thank you. Definitely. Thank you, Jean. Yeah, they've created so many straw men, or in our case, straw women, that they just, you know, they just keep on throwing them in front of people to kind of feed this hysteria. And that it's a form of national hysteria that, as you have put it, is you're hopefully short-lived. And so one of the ways in which you're taking care of yourself is by trying to understand this historically, which is a great approach. I have to say that's a really great approach, because in the long run, that's really the best approach. I mean, if we understand what's going on, then we can sort of navigate it intellectually and emotionally. How about you, Jean? What are you doing to take care of yourself?
I completely agree with the point of historical analysis, not necessarily that it means that things are going to play out in current time, but you know, the historical examples of things like this that have happened, and it wasn't that long ago. I wonder how many people out there remember the whole Anita Bryant thing from, God, that was in the 70s, I believe. And it just had simply to do with gays, okay? And, you know, we lived through that, but that was, that's another example. But, one of the things that Sheila was talking about in terms of terminologies, and the current buzzword is woke, and the way it's being used by the sock puppet media spokespeople of the, you know, this far right ideology, is they're calling it wokeism, which is a pretty broad, I take it as a pretty broad umbrella straw man for a whole lot of stuff, and not just us in the trans minority, but the point being, the operative point being that, number one, this is a script that has been used time and time and time again. Okay? It's not new. It's not new. And we've persevered in the past, and I think when we take an historical look, I think it behooves us to think about how did we deal with it in the past? How did we deal with it in the past? Not to say that that should completely, you know, structure how we deal with it in the current moment, because times change, but I think there's further analysis, not just of our oppressors, but of how the oppressed have dealt with these types of movements and social upheavals in the past. And, you know, the broader LGB, you know, umbrella community fared pretty well coming into the 21st century, and is now no longer, you know, being, you know, targeted in quite the, you know, the same way. But you know, so how did we do that? How did we do that? You know, those same methodologies certainly need to inform us in how we deal with the current situation. Not to say that there isn't other things we can do. I think one of the big changes when we think about some of this historical perspective is, you know, media is much, much, much different today than it was 40 years ago or 60 years ago. Okay? So different. So much of this is simply being played, you know, out in media, almost much more so than in the state houses that we were talking about. So I think, to wrap up my comment here, one of the things that I definitely do for self-care is to at least stay apprised and kind of study some of these media sock puppets, listen to enough of what they're saying to get a feel for what's going on out there in the in media, what the narratives are, and at least that way, I might be able to see, you know, something coming. Other than that, I do my best not to pay so much attention or be so obsessed with it, because it's so triggering and it's just so aggravating and so frustrating, and especially when it comes to the degree of ignorance, sheer ignorance, and vitriol, sheer meanness of it. It's very triggering. So I pay attention, but only up to a point, because I can't allow myself to get, you know, completely immersed in it. I just can't. I don't have the energy for it, and I can't imagine anybody else does.
So, Jean, basically you're saying that part of what you do is you limit the amount of exposure that you have to it, and that's part of how you take care of yourself.
Well, yes, that's a good summary statement. That's a good summary statement, yes.
Yeah, that's great. So we've talked a little bit about the big picture. We've talked some about how we take care of ourselves. What about how do we prepare for the next steps? And let me start this. I'm not going to go back to the beginning of the show, but let me just start this from, you know, let's start this from a frame of where we all are. I mean, we're all kind of older transgender women who have had a lifetime of experience, and we, each one of us in our own way, struggled and fought and succeeded in getting to where we are now in life. And so we have a lifetime of experience to look back on, and we can, you know, probably be happy with our choices and with how far we've come. I mean, I think that if I were you, I would congratulate yourself on having worked so hard to become the woman that you are now. But let's look at where trans kids are right now. Because when we talk about our next steps, let's put ourselves in the shoes of people who are just, who are like 16 years old or 13 years old or 8 years old. And don't even have the benefit of a lifetime of adult experience to look at, but they actually have just their the raw emotional experience of being a child, of being a teenager, and knowing that somehow you're different and feeling like you need to do something about it. And suddenly the thing which probably has the most authority in the world for a lot of people, which is like the police, the judges, the legislature, the law, the schools, are suddenly telling you that you can't do anything. You can't even talk about it. I mean, this is overwhelmingly 80% of the legislation that's being manufactured in the States right now is targeting kids. And I just don't know if we full, I mean, the generation, the young, the millennials who, you know, like everyone over at the National Center of Transgender Equality, not everyone, but a lot of the people there, they're young, but even they're older than the kids, but it's like they're close enough to that stage in life that they know what those kids are going through. They have a fresher memory of it than we do. And I think that everybody is terrified at what this is doing to an entire generation of trans kids, who's basically that trans kids are the ones, kids, we're talking people who are like 8 years old, are basically bearing all of the brunt of this legislation. I mean, it's being targeted not at us as much as it is being targeted at them. They're the victims more than anyone that I can think of. And what I'm wondering is, what are we going to do for them? What are we going to do for that 8-year-old kid who has the entire machinery of a state legislature aimed against him or her from successfully just being themselves? When everything, I mean, they're told you can't participate in sports, you can't use the bathroom, you know, you can't go get any emotional support, you can't get counseling, you can't talk to your parents about it, you can't talk about it in school. All of a sudden, everything that you thought was maybe an opening for you has been shut. What about that 8-year-old kid and all of those kids in all of those states where this horrible, horrible, hateful legislation is taking aim directly at them? What are we going to do for them?
First of all, I think that we've put the bar too high. The assumption on the opposition and the assumption of us digging our feet in has been that everybody is destined for some degree of either puberty blockers, hormone treatments, or surgery. That wasn't the presumption when I was coming up. We had to feel our way into what it would mean to live a transgender life. So we had to invent it from scratch. But the good part about that was we didn't feel any pressures from people pulling us in either direction. We could do what we wanted because we didn't have observers, we didn't have mentors, we didn't have anything. And so for me, it was comfortable to attach myself to the drag community because they were beautiful. They were very edgy. They knew that they couldn't necessarily be themselves everywhere, but when they were themselves, it was like a floral extravaganza, and I was just in awestruck by what I was seeing and realizing that a whole world existed literally below the radar screen. Well, I think we need to give the youth permission to say, you don't have to be drawn into these narratives. This is static. This is something that's way beyond your particular life. You have a whole life to decide what you want to do, how you want to do it. And as I'm getting older, I'm totally aware that there's a big difference from being transgender in my teens and 20s, in my 30s and my 40s, and let's not go too far beyond that, how old I really am. But it really recognized that some of the urgencies of each of those stages aren't even in play anymore. Because of the stage of life that I'm at. And since that's the case, I think that it's very hard to take something that is irrevocable. I've always believed in having a plan B and always being able to know that I knew I was entering into stormy waters, and there's maybe a innate prudence inside of me that said, I have to be ready to, you know, take down my mainsail and run on a storm jib for a while, because I might have to do that. And I think that when you're young, you think, oh my God, every decision I make is going to be cast in stone forever afterwards. And it's so important to tell people when they're young to say, you don't have to make all these commitments. You can feel your way into who you are, and you don't have to know that if I can't make it all the way and I can't have everything, that somehow or other I've failed as a transgender person. That's not so. And any more than anybody else knows what they're going to do. People change careers. They change so many things in their lives. They live in different places. The person that you end up in your middle age, you don't know what that's going to be. So I always want to give hope to the young to say, don't think this is an all or nothing thing. And the reason that's so sad to me, that people that should be responsible are treating it exactly that way. If we don't stomp this out, if we don't shut it up in schools, then it'll just catch on and everybody will be trans. Well, on its face, that's the most ridiculous thing. We're a tiny, tiny, tiny minority, and those that will finally do physical changes are a tinier minority still. So the thing that they're afraid of seems to show to me that they don't have faith in the normative agenda that they assume is so natural, that the only way they can explain this is some sort of demonic infestation. And it's just ridiculous. And it should be on its face, but they think they're protecting the youth. They don't think they're hurting the youth. And that's part of the problem, is that they really haven't done the research to know if they're hurting the youth. They're just really shooting from the hip. And if anything, that's what's really going on. It's not just in this, it's on gun rights, it's everything in our country, is this shooting from the hip without sufficient reflection and listening to people. And so they, once you adopt a certain extreme narrative, you'll pick exactly anything that it reinforces that. And so what we have to do, if we're going to be sane, we have to go the other way. We have to be the reasonable ones. We have to be the ones to say, look at what you're asking for. Do you really think you can make this whole, if it's as big as you think it is, do you think you can make it disappear by passing laws against it or by saying just don't use the words? That's just crazy. And what's really disturbing is that people in authority are the ones that are acting like this in very immature and frankly adolescent fashion. And that's something that makes me, sometimes I think humor might be another one of our coping mechanisms. We have to just shake our heads and say, my God, what's wrong with you?
So I really appreciate that, Sheila. Thank you so much for saying that. I really do. I think that part of what is going on for the kids right now, though, is that, I think that what's going on, if we really look at what's happening in this country, I think that what's really happening is that everyone who's tried to do everything that they could to get the GSAs in place, the Gay Straight Alliances in the school, get access to therapists who can help out kids who are transgender, access to, hormone blockers. What's happened is that everybody's learned from our experiences, not just ours, but like collectively as a culture, people have learned from our experiences as transgender. And they've actually been following best practices this whole time. And I think for me, what I see going on is that we're exactly where we're supposed to be. I mean, we're actually not with this not with all the hate legislation, but with everything else that had been going on in the culture, we were exactly where we were supposed to be. We were making the best choices for ourselves, the younger generation of activists who was in the schools and, at the state legislatures and, at the insurance companies and talking to doctors, everybody was doing, really pulling hard to try to do what was the best practices for our community. And they were doing everything right that they needed to do. And so in a way, we were actually exactly where we needed to be. We were in a place where we were getting healthcare at the appropriate time when we needed it. So we were already doing what we were supposed to do. And the problem is that because we were doing all of the right things, that scared people who don't agree with us. And it scared them so much that they're willing to go to these extremes to kind of other us. I mean, it's like this giant, enormous face of transphobia that's so... It's like a nuclear explosion of transphobia has happened in this country. And it's happened in response to us building a garden, creating a space where we can cultivate joy for people who are transgender by allowing them a pathway to live a happy, successful, long-lived life, without fear, without intimidation, where people have the ability to discover. I mean, there hasn't been any coercion. This hasn't been an act of coercion. This has been people following best practices. And that's what they're reacting against. They're reacting so strongly against us doing what's rational, what's helpful, what's healthy, what's in the best interest of our community, what's supportive, what's nurturing. Those are all words that I would use to describe the steps that our community has taken in the last 10, 15 years. It's been a very nurturing movement. It's been an empowering movement. It's been a thoughtful movement. And all of a sudden, we just got bombed with like a nuclear bomb of transphobia that just is trying to kill it all at once. And I think what we have to do is we have to keep on following best practices. We have to keep on pushing for the things that we know are right, because we're not going back in the closet. There's no way in heck that any of us are going back in the closet. And we just have to push back. But we have to understand that this is something that's going to outlive us. I mean, we're not going to see the mountain. You know, we're not going to get to the promised land in our generation. We're not going to see it. And it's not going to just say, this is an intergenerational process. And we have to understand that we've done our part and we've carried the ball this far. And now it's the next generation's turn. The next generation is already embroiled in this. I mean, they're feeling it. And that 8-year-old kid that I talked about, you know, those kids in school who are the targets of this, they're going to be made strong by this, mm-hmm. by being the direct recipients of so much of this attention. It's going to make them stronger, mm-hmm. and they're going to emerge in a generation or two with something that we can't even think of that's going to transform things, mm-hmm. because that's how the process works, you know? I mean, they're trying to bury mm-hmm. us, and we come crawling out of the ground, and we're this amazing new plant that nobody's ever even seen before. And that's how it works. That's the way that I see it. Well, this has been a really interesting show. I mean, we've had some really great thoughts here on how we can kind of deal with what's going on right now, how we can take care of ourselves, and, you know, some next steps that we can take. So I'd just like to thank all of you so much for joining us today on Transpositive. Sheila, Jean, you're just such beautiful women, and I just really appreciate that you've been part of this show for so long. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Emma. You're welcome.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today on Transpositive, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Good night, everybody.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Thank you.
What's up around me seems to always be. Every night and day, I hang my head and weep, yes, and weep. I love my baby, I want him for myself. If he don't be mine, he won't have nobody else. He has left me, I'll do the best I can. I'm a do-right kid, get a friend in his place I land. Now I got the don't tell me, can't be satisfied. Every night and day, I hang my head and cry. I go to the bike store to buy a rocking chair. Blues overtakes me, gonna rock away from here.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are accepting applications for an engagement coordinator. The engagement coordinator is responsible for sharing KBOO's mission and values across a variety of social media platforms. They also share content created by volunteers and co-sponsors. We are looking for individuals who have skills writing marketing copy and creating and editing graphic and multimedia content. To apply, send your resume and cover letter